Here's a quick word from our football educational partners over at the Scouting Academy.
Listen, we've said it all the time. If you love the analysis and you're passionate about football, then you really need to check out the Scouting Academy. Whether you're a football coach, aspiring writer, or even aspiring football agent, the Scouting Academy is really a perfect place for you to learn and develop your skills as an analyst. With curriculum that spans over 375 years of coaching and personnel experience, the Scouting Academy offers you a 16-week online course that you can tailor and build to meet your needs and your interests. Whether you're learning about wide receivers or defensive linemen, you can make the experience what you want it to be. Listen, I've said it to you on this podcast many times. I've spent my own money, my own time, and time away from my friends and family because I am just this passionate about this game. And the Scouting Academy is the place where I really feel like I've learned the most I've ever learned about the game of football. It's made me a better analyst. It's made me a better person in terms of the coaching I do on the field. I can't say enough great things about it. If you have any questions about the Scouting Academy, please don't hesitate to reach out to Dan Hatman on Twitter or reach out to the Scouting Academy online via email. I'm open to all questions as well. Heck, I'm still even a student there myself. Please don't hesitate to reach out. I really think that once you learn all the tools and gain the knowledge that they have to offer, I really think you're going to be absolutely excited about the game of football again.
This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
This is where it all counts. This is why we're here. This is why each one of us are here.
And now, here's your host.
And we are back. This is another edition of the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast. I am Paul Perticchese. Joining me, as always, is Mr. Matt Caraccio. Matt, welcome back to your Buster Series, continuing with the 2019 tight end class this evening.
Boom, Paul. That's all I know. I don't even know what else to say. I mean, that's exactly how it feels. I mean, here we are exploding onto the scene with just another positional group that I honestly, I mean, I would say that the O.J. Howard, Evan Ingram, you know, David Njoku year was intriguing. Only I would say this year has a lot to offer in terms of depth and in terms of skill. So I'm really excited to get into this tight end class, Paul. But before we kind of get into that, I have a question. I mean, because I feel like before we get into these positions and seeing what our tiers really unfold like, I'm curious, Paul, what were your thoughts about the tight end position as a position of evaluation this year? Not necessarily these players, but was there anything that you kind of brought to the table this year that may have been different?
Yeah, I mean, the tight end position is one of those things that we've talked about for years since we've been doing Saturday to Sunday. It's a very difficult position to evaluate in the scope that of access that we have film to. Because when you really stop and think about it, the tight end position at the collegiate level is not maximized and utilized to the level at the NFL. And it seems to be two really distinct positions at the collegiate game. You have the pass-catching tight end, and if we just use the class that you talked about, like the Evan Ingram role, where his job at Ole Miss was basically to catch footballs, run routes, almost be a big wide receiver who lined up in the slot often, detached from the line, occasionally in line, but mostly just to kind of chip block and then get into his, you know, into his route. And then you have the guys that are the blocking types, like the Will Disley from last year, you know, who was one of the top blocking tight ends in the country, you know, for Washington, you know, and then occasionally you have the guy that dabbles in both. And I think the guy that dabbles in both is very, very rare at the collegiate game. So what I kind of looked for this year was, you know, I was looking for those guys that could make an impact in the pass catching way at the NFL, but to see also, you know, and I know it's a word that we've talked a lot about off air, like, are they functional blockers that they could hold the point of attack, be adequate in the pass protection, in run blocking, you know, so it's not so obvious when they're on the field, you know, and basically immediately the defenses know, you know, what the play call is going to be. If it's a run play, you know, if the blocking guy's in there, it's a pass play, if the pass catching tight end's in there. So I was looking for guys that at least had the capabilities to be serviceable, to be functional in the blocking component, in addition to them being weapons in the pass catching game. You know, so that was kind of what I was looking for this year. Obviously, at times, guys really jump and pop off the page in terms of their blocking ability, but I think that's fewer and far between. You know, when we're watching so many of these guys, the guys that are on our watch list before the year starts, guys that we kind of hear about late in the process and go back, they always seem to be the pass catching types, the athletic types, you know, guys that maybe transferred, went to a lower level of school. I'm thinking of one guy in particular we'll talk about later tonight, you know, and all of a sudden gets an opportunity and you see his athleticism shine at a lower level of competition, you know, and you see that pass catching ability. So that's kind of the way that I broached it this year, looking for those guys who can be weapons in the pass game but be functional in the blocking game.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the word functional, and Paul really kind of brings up a great point. We are officially abandoning here at Saturday to Sunday the word solid or average. We're just kind of leaving that by the wayside for a more of a movement science based word, more of a skill acquisition based word, and you'll hear us use this a lot. It's called functional. And just for those people that are out there listening to us, when we say functional, by definition, functional means that the player or the performer is able to accomplish the task goals. He's able to accomplish the task goals and maintain the expected level of performance. So there's a lot of ambiguity there. So I think Paul kind of unpacked it implicitly, but I'll go back and kind of just tease it out a little bit more. So when you ask yourself, what are the task goals? I think that really comes down to at the tight end position, it depends if it's a run play or a pass play. And then when you talk about the level of performance, again, Paul kind of unpacked it when he started saying a little bit like adequate and things of that nature. These are very important questions for you to ask yourself as an evaluator, because if you don't have these baselines intact, it's going to be hard to really discriminate between guys that are just functional and guys that are maybe more than functional. Guys that are more than functional, what it means is that those players have many different ways to accomplish those task goals and maintain performance. That's where we start talking about expert level skill players. So when you talk about guys that have great skill, we're talking about those guys that are functional and can do what they're asked to do in a multitude of ways. Their motor variability, their motor creativity, their ability to solve the problems in a lot of different ways is very much apparent. So when we talk about player problem solver paradigm, we're looking for those players that are, to begin with, functional with respect to their responsibilities and positions, but we're also looking for those guys that exceed that in the way that they can solve those problems in a multitude of ways while still maintaining performance. And then those guys that are really truly special are those guys that no matter what situation they're in, no matter what problem they have, the Saquon Barkleys of the world, the Barry Sanders of the world, they just have the right key for the right lock. They have that true dexterity. So I think Paul did a great job there. And Paul, I think that's kind of where I sit here. And I really did try to ponder this. And I don't know to what degree I was able to come to really some beautiful answers here. Because to be very frank with you, I think we talked about this previously. We're so limited by footage. You know, I mean, when we talk about blocking schemes, for example, and you have to evaluate a tight end's ability to block in a particular play, we really lack the perspective and the actual spacing and fidelity of spacing that exists from, let's say, an end zone camera view. When you get the view of a line from the end zone, you can truly see whether or not that guard and that center are really creeping their stances together to maybe take on a defensive tackle that's going to be a real handful and really leaving that tight end out on his own. Or maybe you see a defensive, an offensive tackle really kind of take his split and shrink it down with the offensive guard because they're trying to maybe combo block up to the second level. And we know that that tight end's going to have that linebacker on the edge by himself or that defensive end by himself. We don't have those things. We don't see those things from our perspective. So I think that we are very much limited by the film, but I really tried to break it down and said, what are the principles of the position? For me, the principle number one is in a passing situation, I want to see them be able to be functional, which means I want to see them be able to accomplish the goals of being able to run a route and actually catch the football. And I know that sounds simplistic, but I'm looking at this from a wide receiver position. I want to see functional wide receiver skills in my tight end. Okay. So that means that they may not run the same, you know, variety of routes, but I want to see them have the same representative ability to run routes and catch the football. As a blocker, I want to see them be able to stalemate a defensive end. I want to see them be able to at least impede the progress of a defensive end or an outside linebacker blitzing. It may not be that they can actually push the point of attack. Those guys may be very rare, but I want to see them at least stalemate. So I guess when it comes down to it, the principles of a tight end are really twofold. They have to satisfy the general principles of a wide receiver, and they have to satisfy the general principles of an offensive lineman. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think that they're going to be able to do that. There are very few that could ever do that to that level. The guys who have done it, Jason Witten. The guys who have done it, Tony Gonzalez. The guys that have done it, maybe Antonio Gates. You know, I mean, you're talking about guys that are all world tight ends, guys that are historically great. So let's at least put that as a primer for the types of aspirations that these guys would live up to if they were to do both so well. And let's work from there. And I think that everything here that we're about to talk about tonight, Paul, really, when you look at it, I think we're talking about there is a degree, again, available footage, very limited, of projectability here. So if we're going to go ahead and kind of get right into that first tier, Paul, why don't you go ahead and outline the first tier and rattle off your first guys?
Yeah, I mean, and the tiers, you know, are very unique for the tight end position because obviously we try to put a little bit of a spin on it in terms of dynasty rookie value as well. But then obviously, you know, it's a unique position because like that elite blocker, where does he belong in the tier? You know, so you know, if you read the tiers carefully, you know, that are outlined in the, you know, rankings notebook, you get a good feel for it. But tier one at the tight end position for us is a first round or early second round NFL draft selection. In terms of dynasty rookie drafts, we think that often would, you know, basically represent a late first to second round dynasty rookie pick, you know, in a traditional type setting, you know, one tight end. We believe it's a capability to be a complete tight end or create mismatches regularly as a pass catcher. So that's that second part right there that kind of encompasses tier one. You know, they might not be that complete tight end that Matt was just talking about, but they might be able to create mismatches regularly as a pass catcher, similar to an Evan Engram type who we saw go round one, who Matt and I were super high on, had in tier one a couple years ago. So my tier one this year has three players in it. I think this is an outstanding tight end class. For me, top of my tier one is TJ Hockenson out of Iowa. I think he's the most complete tight end in the class. I've been saying for weeks on the show and when I was on other shows as well that he reminds me a lot of Hunter Henry. I've heard some people say he's going to test better athletically than people might think, and people might even be saying a little bit like his former Iowa tight end himself, George Kittle. That's the kind of player that people see for TJ Hockenson, the complete package, can block, can pass catch, can go up and win at the catch point. Irv Smith Jr. out of Alabama and Noah Fant out of Iowa also make up my tier one. Irv Smith Jr., I think he's a smaller version of O.J. Howard. He doesn't have the massive size and frame of O.J. Howard, but great athleticism, good route runner, good blocker, makes plays after the catch, can get vertical, love his overall game, but I think he's got that blocking capabilities as well. The only questions I have is I never really got the chance to see him too often in contested situations because he just never really was asked to do that. And then Noah Fant is more like that guy I was just saying, that Evan Engram type. I don't think he's as refined as a route runner, but I think his athleticism, his speed, his quickness create mismatches, you know, for him to warrant being in my tier one. Matt, same players, anybody not in your tier one that was in mine or anybody additionally in your tier one?
No, actually, our tier ones pretty much match up pretty much perfectly. I actually have TJ Hockenson one, then I have Irv Smith, and then I have Noah Fant. And I think that there's something that I wanted to point out. It's not kind of ironic, but when you actually kind of look at this, it's not shocking, Paul, when we do think about the NFL game, and we always talk here about it's not about just watching film, right? It's all about trying to find those representative problems that model and replicate as closely as possible those types of situations you would see in the NFL, right? I mean, that's how you evaluate film to the best of your ability. The more those representative situations and similarly behaving situations you can find, the more likely you are to see the performer act in a way that will transition to the next level. That's basic skill acquisition and ecological dynamics, that theory right there. And you know what, Paul, when I think about the guys that we've chosen, it doesn't shock me, because when we look at some of the most successful players right now at the position, speaking of which, you have Zach Ertz, you have Hunter Henry, you have Travis Kelce, you have you have Gronkowski, you have Dallas Goedert, you have OJ Howard, you have Kittle, George Kittle as well. You know what's similar about all those players when I kind of rattle them off? You're talking about situations and programs like Stanford, Arkansas, Cincinnati when they were a heavy run team. You're talking about Arizona with Gronkowski when they were predominantly a pass team, but they also ran the football well. You're talking about when Dallas Goedert, it was a big-time passing program. OJ Howard, Alabama, always big-time running program when he was involved. Same thing with George Kittle at Iowa, big-time running program. It's not shocking to me that those programs continue to produce players that we're interested in. We have two guys from Iowa and a guy from Alabama. That goes to show you that the similar situations and behaving situations that those gentlemen are routinely in do, in fact, in many ways transfer. Even though we could argue Alabama's identity completely changed this season from years past, it's still of note and interest that they did, when all things were down, they still relied on their running game to actually push the ball. They didn't abandon it for what they were doing. So when we talk about these guys and we look at why we like them, I mean, listen, I'm on board with you for everything that you said. I thought TJ Hockenson was very functional blocking through all angles, except to his right. At times, I thought his right angle blocking was a little bit of an issue moving to his right. That's just nitpicking. But I mean, overall, I mean, you're talking very functional after the catch. You're talking about a solid, solid catch radius. You're talking about above average acceleration at the line of scrimmage. He was able to be deceptive throughout his route tree. His releases versus in out of 3-point stances and 2-point stances was great. Blocking and pass protection or on the run versus tight shaded defenders, I thought he did a nice job there. I thought he met the functional task goals of his position and then some, because he was able to adapt in the moment. And we talked about contact fidelity, Paul. I think there's room for that to grow as a concept, because I think that there's fidelity within actual situations on the field as well as a blocker, as well as situations where you're in contested situations as a ball catcher. Because your ability to control your body is directly related to your perception of the information around you. You have to be aware of what's around you to best control your body and be able to make progress moving forward. So I really like Hockenson. Fant, to me, I thought really the biggest knock on Fant, as far as I was concerned, he's not a guy that's going to get you a lot of yards after the catch. He's a guy that's going to be able to get downfield, run crisp routes. He was above average in terms of his coordination, in terms of making catches and transitioning to a runner after the catch, thereby like kind of highlighting that speed. That coordinated movement is really big for him. I thought he was functional on down blocks when he had the angle. Overall, I thought he had good releases versus press coverage and off coverage. I thought at the tops of his routes, he showed good separation quickness. I thought there was nice movement to him. I really do think Irv Smith is what we wanted Evan Engram to be. And what I mean by that is because I think there's more balance there in terms of a blocker. And I think for that reason, I don't think you're going to see what happened to Evan Engram, unfortunately, what they're doing in New York, where they're trying to, I almost want to say they're pushing him aside a little bit, it seems. You know, I mean, yes, he was the focal point when OBJ wasn't there, but it seems like the minute OBJ's back, we're going to go back to routinely useless. And that could be the system, it could be the coach, whatever. I think Irv Smith is going to be a lot harder to move, because I think he's going to be able to contribute in a lot of aspects of the game. So I know that's a little bit of a long rant on these guys, but I do think that you're talking about three very, very special players at the position. If I had my druthers and I could really go out and draft one as in my rookie drafts, I'd be tempted to go with Irv Smith, because I think he's an immediate mismatch in the passing game. I think day one, he's on the field. I think TJ Hockenson is awesome. I think he's the guy you can grow on if you need a tight end. But I also really like Irv Smith right now. I mean, so TJ Hockenson's still number one, but I'd be hard-pressed not to take Irv Smith over him. I really would be. The part of me says I want to take TJ Hockenson because that's the most responsible thing to do. But Irv Smith, man, I watch him as a route runner, and he's just as electric and deceptive in his routes as Evan Engram was.
Yeah, listen, I think both of those guys, you know, are going to be great at the next level. I think they're probably going to be one and two in terms of snap counts for the tight end class. I think Fan will be after them because of his, you know, not that complete player that the other two potentially are. You know, and I think they're, in terms of their dynasty rookie value, I think a lot of it's going to come down to maybe for those two guys, separating them is going to be landing spot, opportunity, you know, quarterback, stuff like that. But I do agree with you that I think Irv Smith could have a bigger impact if all things are relatively equal, you know, and create more mismatches regularly with his speed, athleticism, and quickness that we're going to see. So let's transition this to tier two. Tier two is made up of guys that we believe are going to be day two picks in the NFL draft, so round two or round three. In terms of the fantasy spin, we think these guys are going to be potentially mid round two to round three dynasty rookie picks, you know, if they're a receiving tight end. We believe these are tight ends that possess several average to above average traits to contribute immediately to the passing game and be at least adequate as a blocker, or displays at least adequate receiving and very good to great blocking capabilities. So that's something that we added last year, that or statement, that, yeah, they could be a great blocker and adequate in the passing game, and they're probably not going to be drafted in your fantasy drafts in that round two, round three range for your dynasty rookie drafts, but they might be drafted as a round three pick in the NFL draft. So we kind of expanded upon that tier last year.
Well, if we Paul, take, let me ask, I'm just interrupting you because I just want the listeners to know out there, the goal of these tiers is not necessarily for fantasy. So just keep that in mind. Like when we're actually talking about these tiers, we're trying to encompass all of that. But for example, people might say my Durham Smythe discussion is just silly. And how could it be? The dude started, man. He got a ton of snaps at the NFL level as a rookie. Do you know what I'm saying? So consider that when you're looking at some of these tiers, just something to throw out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why if you really look at the tiers carefully and you purchase the premium notebooks, you see us identify the traits that make up guys in this tier. You also see their NFL draft projection, and you also see the, you know, fantasy projection. That fantasy projection is very loosely interpreted. Your league could be very different. It could be tight end premium. It could be two tight ends. You know, same thing for the quarterback rankings that we did last week. Like if it's a super flex or a two quarterback league, things change a lot. So again, we're trying to encompass our evaluations on film of these guys to where we think they're going to get picked, to where we also think that they could be potentially valued in terms of fantasy. Listen, when after the draft, we both put out our dynasty rookie rankings immediately. That is the first time that we 100% cater our rankings and thoughts to fantasy football and your dynasty rookie drafts. But the rest of the time, our draft rankings, you know, our tiers, you know, our scouting notebook thoughts, that is what we think of these guys as players on our own analysis. So we try to encompass everything. Sometimes it's a little bit cumbersome, you know, so we have to try to explain it like that, but that's kind of the best way to put it. So if we take this to my tier two, I got four guys in my tier two. My tier two starts out with Caden Smith out of Stanford. I think he's a guy who's average athleticism, but he wins at the catch point. He uses his body well. I think he's got big mitts for hands. I think he can use that body to create space at the catch point, and he does a great job going up and high pointing the ball well. To me, he reminds me collegiately, stylistically, schematically of Zach Ertz. Now, Zach Ertz has had a tremendous career in the NFL, became one of the best tight ends in football. No one thought that about Zach Ertz when he came out of college and was a mid-second round pick or so. They liked his game, but they thought, you know, that he had some question marks about him. I think Caden Smith falls into that category. Next for me is Jay Sternberger at Texas A&M. You know, great size, really good pass catching, really athletic for a man his size, shows good quickness and bursts after the catch, can go up and win it at the catch point. You know, Sternberger is an intriguing prospect. You know, I like his game. And then third and fourth in this tier for me is Dawson Knox out of Ole Miss and Isaac Nauta out of Georgia. Dawson Knox out of Ole Miss, this is a little bit on just raw projection and upside. He's a guy who Ole Miss didn't utilize a lot, but everything about him says he should be a weapon. He should have been a weapon at Ole Miss, but they didn't take advantage of it. And he has the capabilities to be, you know, a weapon at the NFL level. He's got great size, good frame. He shows functional in terms of his blocking, but I think he can be a weapon in the pass game with his athleticism, with his ability to go up and get the ball. I think Dawson Knox has a lot of upside and potential there that we just haven't seen yet in his overall game. And then Isaac Nauta, you know, bounce back year this year, finally was asked to be more involved in the offense. I think he caught about 30 passes this year. You know, this has been a guy who is a highly regarded prospect coming in. And just now, as we were talking about the tiers earlier today, I finally came up with a projection that I really like for Isaac Nauta. And if he can match this level of play in terms of blocking and receiving at the NFL level, teams would love to draft this guy on the day two of the NFL draft, and that's Jack Doyle of the Indianapolis Colts. I think athletically, stylistically, size-wise, receiving, blocking capabilities, Isaac Nauta is very comparable to a guy like Jack Doyle. Matt, your tier two, different, similar, anybody added in or taken out?
Actually, so I'm going to take you through my tiers. Actually, very similar. I actually have Isaac Nauta as my top guy in tier two, then followed by Caden Smith, then Jay Sternberger, then Dawson Knox. And finishing up, I really struggled with this player, and this is really a great talking point probably, but Joshua Oliver. I actually pushed Joshua Oliver up. And the reason why I pushed him up is just on film when I watched him in terms of not only his physical and athletic traits, but obviously his just overall his overall package, both in terms of what he could do in the blocking game as a run blocker, but also what he could do flexed out in the slot, off the line of scrimmage, what he could do as a route runner, as well as a pass catcher, just really intrigued significantly. And I really liked what I saw from Josh Oliver, and I really think that he's a player who could very much emerge. So I struggled between tier three and tier two for him. But I do think that when push comes to shove, I just saw the skill set that I thought was very good. I thought he was both functional as a run blocker. I thought he had functionality as a pass catcher and route runner. I saw more room for his game. He probably fits very similarly, Paul, to the narrative you just discussed in terms of Dawson Knox. Although he did get the actual, production and burn, it still wasn't at the elitist of elite levels. And I think that's always going to be a question mark on Oliver, but I think there's a lot to like there. The guy that I'll keep pounding the table for is I'll continue to pound the table for Isaac Nauta. I still remain unflinched in terms of what he's capable of. I think he's more than functional in the run game. In fact, I would consider him skillful in the run game because of his ability to handle and adapt to multiple types of blocking situations. I think he's very, very adept both against tight shaded as well as outside shaded defenders. I think he's functional in space. He has the capability to stalemate defensive ends, and he can impede at least the progress of elite defensive ends. And I think that's something to be said all to itself. I think as a pass catcher and route runner, I think he was used so infrequently. I think the narrative follows along with Dawson Knox as well. I think there were moments where he really did show that there's more in terms of his route deception, in terms of his skill set as a wide receiver, that really separates him from this class. He's the guy that I would have said, if there's a guy that could, catapult and hurdle himself, into that tier one, he's still my choice. Caden Smith, I thought you really described him beautifully. I think there's really a lot of understanding for Caden Smith being good at the catch point. I really can't overemphasize how important that is to understand. Being good at the catch point is as much a discussion of contact fidelity as it is really about catching the football, because you have to have, that awareness of where your body is in space, but also where the actual players are around you, both offensively and defensively. Because if you're able to be good against the sideline, or you're able to be good in contested situations, that means that you have a very, very good connection to the moment and all the variables that are there for you to connect to in terms of catching the football, impeding contact, catch the football and turn up field and get yards after the catch. There's a lot of layers to those problems. And I think that we kind of think is, oh, he's strong. He caught the ball in contested situations. That's pretty much the end of the story. I'm not so sure of that anymore. I believe that there's more to it. And when you watch guys like Noah Fant, I think he does it at the highest of levels. And I think Caden Smith does it a next tier below them. They catch the ball and then they're automatically getting upfield. And that can't be overstated. It really can't be. And I think Isaac Nauta does that as well. I think he does it better than Caden Smith, which is why I have him ahead of him. So, I mean, I think that this idea of being more inquisitive and more curious about what's happening in contested situations really does define what it means to have body control and what it means to not have body control. We kind of lump it into this one trait, but in reality, it's a collective bunch of traits. And I think we really can't say enough about that. So I thought you did a really good job on Caden Smith. I would like to hear, though, what you do think about Joshua Oliver. Where does he fall for you, Paul?
Yeah, so actually it's the perfect pivot to tier three because he is the first name on tier three for me. That literally
we don't look at each other's. I swear to God, we don't look at the only thing I take from Paul is I'll take the names and then I immediately reorganize them by alphabetical order because I don't want to be biased in any way. So we have zero idea of really what we're doing before we get on this show.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny. He's at the top of my tier three, and, you know, we always at some point usually make the reference of, is there a guy who potentially could jump a tier? Josh Oliver is the guy who I think has the most intrigue to potentially jump a tier. For me, my question mark on Josh Oliver is he looked like he was a above average to good athlete against the level of competition I saw. So for me, a guy like him, the combine is important. For a guy like Josh Oliver, if he goes there and he really tests out well athletically, I'll probably bump him up and put him, you know, where I have Dawson Knox as that guy who I think, you know, has the athletic profile to be a well-balanced tight end, to be functional in the blocking game, but also be a weapon in the pass game. But for me, Oliver is the guy who I need to see the athletic testing because it looked like at times he was a superior athlete to most of the level of competition that he was playing against. And I need to see that a little bit more. So that it's ironic that you asked about him and he's right at the top of my tier three. So before I give the rest of my tier three, let me just kind of give the breakdown of what tier three consists of. It's guys that we think are round four, round five players in the NFL draft. In terms of the fantasy spin, we think they're potentially late round three or round four dynasty rookie picks if they're a pass catcher. We believe they possess several average traits to contribute in the passing game or at least it adequate as a blocker and or displays at least adequate receiving and above average to good blocking capabilities. So, you know, a little bit different in terms of just the quality compared to the things we made up in tier two. So tier three, we already said Josh Oliver is at the top of my tier three out of San Jose State. Below him is Tommy Sweeney at Boston College. I think Tommy Sweeney is one of the better all-around balanced tight ends in this class. You know, I think he's a really good blocker, one of the better blockers in the class, but I think he's got better receiving capabilities than people think. Is he a great athlete? No. But I think we could say the same thing about, you know, Caden Smith. As long as his athleticism is average, I think that's enough for him because he knows how to use his body well. He's got really good hands, and he shows the capability to win at the catch point. So if you combine that with really good blocking capabilities, I think the NFL is going to like Tommy Sweeney a little bit more than a lot of draft Twitter does. I think he's got an opportunity to be, you know, a guy taken early in day three, early in round four. And if he tests better than I even expect at the combine, I wouldn't even be stunned to put him potentially in the day round three mix as well. Alzay Mack out of Notre Dame, this is raw potential and upside. I still think he's got a lot of untapped receiving ability. I think he's really shown growth and development as a blocker. So I think he's more of a complete tight end now than I ever thought he could be when he first got to Notre Dame. I still think he's got good athleticism to be a receiving weapon as well. Caleb Wilson, I think at UCLA, to me, he's a pass catching tight end at the next level, but he doesn't have great athleticism. I think he has functional to above average athleticism. So I don't know how that translates because at the next level, those tight ends that really make an impact, those move tight ends, like those guys like Jordan Reed, I don't know if he's got the athleticism to be a Jordan Reed type. He definitely doesn't have the athleticism to be an Evan Ingram type. You know, could he be a Trey Burden like? I don't know. It took Trey Burden some time to even get an opportunity. Caleb Wilson, very productive receiver. I like his receiving ability, his hands getting open, but I don't know if when the level of athletes on the defense are better, if he's going to be able to do that regularly. Dax Raymond out of Utah State, to me, very similar to Josh Oliver. I just don't see as good athleticism, so I have him a few spots behind, but I like his size. I like his receiving ability. I think he could be a functional blocker. The next name is a guy, Cahale Warring out of San Diego State, is probably the guy who I'm most intrigued with. There's very minimal film out there for people like us to get a hold of on this. I had to almost basically Google just San Diego State highlights and stuff to try to find some opportunity to watch this kid. But I think he's got a lot of upside to be a pass catching tight end at the next level. He left as a junior, so he's an underclassman. I think the minimal I've seen of him, really good athleticism, really good at the catch point, good receiving ability, good length catch radius. Very intrigued to hopefully, get more film available on him and see him at the combine. And then I end this tier with Foster Moreau out of LSU, Trevon Wesco out of West Virginia, and Drew Sample out of Washington. I think they're all above average to good blockers. I think Foster Moreau is one of the better blockers in the class. I think Wesco and Sample right there with him, with Sweeney and Hawkinson, I think are some of the best blockers in this class. Wesco showed a little bit of receiving ability at the Senior Bowl. I think Foster Moreau has some untapped receiving ability as well. Good length, ability to high point it. And I think Drew Sample is a guy who he can be a check down option, you know, get a first down, keep it moving. But I think he's a good blocking tight end. So that kind of makes up my tier three there, a very wide, expansive tier of guys who I think could be in that round 4 or 5 mix. Probably some of them will get pushed to even round 6 or round 7 when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to highlight some of the guys that I have in this tier, and I'll just kind of pick up on a couple of notes that you had, just some guys that stood out to me. So I have Alize Mack heading off the top of this tier, followed by Tommy Sweeney, followed by Caleb Wilson out of UCLA, Dax Raymond from Utah State, Drew Sample from Washington, and I'm finishing off with Foster Moreau from LSU. And the guys that I would really highlight from this particular tier, just in terms of the notes that I had in terms of guys that stood out to me, I guess I'm a little bit of a bigger fan than Drew Sample, maybe than some people may think. You know, some people are going to look at Drew Sample. And again, I think you kind of put the nail on the head where it's he's a guy that can move the chains. And I do agree with that. And I think it's how he's going to move the chains that may kind of avail himself to many opportunities at the NFL level, or at least give him the opportunity to be successful at the NFL level. Because when it comes to blocking, I think he really struggles in space. So let's start at the blocking level. I think in space, he really did struggle. That means climbing to the second level. That means from a sniff tight end position, being a guy who has to maybe hook block and get around the defensive end and get up to the linebacker. That just wasn't his place. You know, pulling and having to, you know, kind of track through the, you know, the trash, so to speak, and find that guy to block, that wasn't his strength. But I do think that when it came down to him as a receiver, there were moments for him where I thought he was very explosive at the line of scrimmage. I thought he had what we say is, like, you know, Paul said it, functional athleticism. What that means to me is that means that he can access the full range of his athletic capabilities in certain circumstances. So I thought he had functional athleticism as a route runner. I really did think he had full range and depth of his athletic ability, both in terms of getting off the line of scrimmage with his explosive strength and his acceleration, as well as his change of direction speed, which he was able to utilize, you know, his actual strength in his lower body to explode in and out of his breaks. I thought he was able to access that. So that's why I'm giving him that functional kind of athletic criteria being met as in terms of a wide receiver. I thought his hands were solid. I thought he did a nice job, you know, catching around his frame, even though, you know, the extent of which he was doing that was very minimal. Foster Moreau, on the other hand, I think, Paul, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think in overall, in terms of blocking capability, I think he's above average blocker. I thought he had really, really good contact fidelity as a blocker, maneuvering in blocks, being able to adapt, being able to readjust his hands against defensive ends, as well as other players that are rushing in pass protection and as a run blocker. I thought he looked really good. I thought in terms of, you know, what he was able to do, you know, as a receiver, you know, I thought he was okay as a receiver, and I think there's room for him to be exploited there. But again, what I saw a lot from this class is I see a lot of guys leveraging their physical strength at the top of their routes in order to disengage from collisions by DBs. That means they're just throwing guys off of them. And I think that works to a point. It's just that you're going to see guys at the next level where I think similarly behaving problems, you're going to see that those DBs and those linebackers and those safeties aren't going to give you the type of inches that you think you're going to be able to get at the next level. They're going to be able to hang you up. They're going to pull on your jersey. They're going to tie you up in many different ways. So it's just something to be aware of. I also think that out of this entire group, I think Alize Mack is the most intriguing, because I think after the catch, he might be the most dynamic tight end after the catch as anybody in this class. And that goes for everybody in this class, with the exception of Irv Smith and maybe Dawson Knox. I would say that Alize Mack might be the most dynamic after the catch. I really do believe that he might be most skillful in the open field of any of these players in this class at this position. But I do think he's going to be limited. I think Paul's right. I think he showed some progression as a blocker, but it's not enough for me to feel comfortable drafting him and putting him in immediately in a blocking role. I can see subsets and packages where I use him as a move tight end and I put him up tight to the slot, very much how Evan Ingram was used in New York. I can see him spotting in right there in those roles. And I think Tommy Sweeney, Paul, is an absolute animal of a blocker. He's an animal of a run blocker. Talk about a player who is best situated to a run blocking scheme, whether it be zone blocking or gap blocking. It's absolutely Tommy Sweeney. He makes every offensive line coach swoon. I guarantee you every offensive line coach is going to swoon and just get lightheaded, and they're going to need cups of water to just revive them because they're going to be so enthralled with what Tommy Sweeney can bring. They're going to be like, why doesn't this kid play O-line? We'll make this kid an O-lineman. He really does remind me of Durham Smythe in that role. And I think that Durham Smythe was very much that type of blocker coming out of Notre Dame. And it doesn't shock me, Paul. What did we talk about at the beginning of this whole discussion? Teams that were excellent in the run game tend to produce excellent blockers, and historically great teams, BC is one of them. They're historically a great offensive line and running team. It doesn't shock me that you have a mauler at tight end, and the fact that he can catch the football and be functional. By functional, we're talking functionally in terms of catching the football at the tops of his routes. He can use his body. He is functional in contested situations. He can use his body. He can extend away from his frame, and he could do it beyond his frame in many different ways. He is functional as a catcher of the football, but he is not a functional route runner. He is not, you know, a functional guy to get open. He has to be schemed open as part of, let's say, a play action game or something to that effect.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm a fan of Tommy Sweeney. I know, you know, listen, I know as a Giants fan, they could save a decent amount of money if they move on from Rhett Ellison, who took on a much bigger role this year as they kind of cut back on Evan Ingram's usage because they wanted that run blocking capability from their tight end with Saquon Barkley there. And Ellison even had some decent games receiving because it just kind of opened up the door by that power running game. Listen, the Giants have 3 fourth-round picks, 3 fifth-round picks. I would love Tommy Sweeney to be one of those guys if they look to move on from Rhett Ellison, save some money. I think you can put in Tommy Sweeney. I think he's a better pass catcher and better receiver than a guy like Rhett Ellison, who offers more in the pass game, but I think he's just as good, if not better, of a blocker potentially as Rhett Ellison, who's a very good blocker in his own right, if they want to utilize Evan Ingram a little bit more as a traditional pass catcher, maybe even a little bit as an outside wide receiver. I think those are options on the table. So let's take this to tier four, and let me just kind of break down what is in tier four. Tier four are round six, round seven, or UDFA type players, you know, late round watch list, dynasty rookie picks, depth players, possesses some average traits that could contribute to a team's passing and or running game, you know, may also include guys that we've just had limited exposures to make a full, true determination on. As we've been saying today, you know, getting film on these guys at times, you know, is very cumbersome at the tight end position. So my tier four consists of the following guys. It has CJ Conrad out of Kentucky. He was at the East-West Shrine game. Listen, I think he's a lesser version of Tommy Sweeney. I think he's a solid functional blocker, a little bit, you know, solid receiving, but I don't think he's as good as Tommy Sweeney in both of them. Zach Gentry out of Michigan is the most intriguing name on this list for me. Great length, great size, can go up and get the ball, can attack the seam a little bit. Gentry is probably the guy in my tier four with the most upside to potentially move into tier three for me. Kendall Blanton out of Missouri, height, weight, speed guy, not a lot of production, very raw, probably a developmental guy on a practice squad or late round pick. Keenan Brown out of Texas State is the intriguing one I mentioned before. He started his career at Oklahoma State, transferred, you know, I think as a graduate transfer to Texas State, caught over 50 passes this year, very athletic, you know, former, I think, high school wide receiver, very intriguing player, Keenan Brown, versatility to be an H-back, lineup in line, in the slot, very good after the catch there. Keenan Brown is an intriguing prospect, interested to see how he tests at the combine. Daniel Helm out of Duke, Donald Parham out of Stetson, the big tall kid who was at the Senior Bowl, Matt Sokol out of Michigan State, Brandon Fritz out of UNC, and Tyler Petit out of USC. I think the guys that are most intriguing there are Zach Gentry, like I mentioned, Keenan Brown. Those are the two guys who I think are, I'm intrigued to see how they test. I'm intrigued to see them in the pre-draft process, you know, and just how they could potentially look in terms of, can they elevate their game a little bit to the next level? You know, so those are just some of the other guys. Matt, any either thoughts on any of those guys or any, you know, overriding thoughts on the tight ends as in general?
No, I think the last tier, I think I agree with you. One of the guys that stood out to me the most, and he stood out to me all season because he just kept catching my eye on Saturdays, and that was Zach Gentry. So out of that entire list, Zach Gentry was a guy that I just, before even watching him, it was just a guy that stayed with me throughout the entire season. And I'm really intrigued to see what he does. In fact, I mistaked him at times for a wide receiver. So, I mean, it was just that type of movement skills that really drew me to him. So I'm excited to see how that goes. But Paul, as we kind of really kind of close this out and talk about this class, I'm going to ask you to you know, plant a flag, so to speak, and talk about maybe the players that you would be moving heaven and earth to get that are not in your top three. So let's talk about the guys outside of your top three. Okay. I know you have your tiers. Who out of your top three? Okay. So take away those guys. Who from the top three on, who is the most likely, in your opinion, that we're talking about during the season when we're doing the NFL rookie report? Who are we talking about that surprised everyone? Not surprised, but maybe we knew he was on the periphery, but he really broke through. Who's going to be the player, in your opinion, at this position that's not going to be named Hopkins or Irv Smith Jr. or Fant? Who's going to break through?
I think it's going to be, I'm going to say Jay Sternberger. I think if he ends up in the right situation, listen, we kind of ran into this last year with Mike Gesicki, you know, very good athletic pass catching tight end. I think Sternberger is a little bit more physical to him, but I think there are some similarities in terms of athletically, you know, them testing out really well, being weapons after the catch, winning at the catch point, high point in ability. If he was to end up in a situation that utilized the tight end, I can see us having, you know, discussions about, you know, Jay Sternberger. I think he could be an intriguing guy. If we go even further, I think if I'm going
to, I want you to go submarine level.
If we're going to go submarine level, who's okay, number 10?
Cause that was like scuba. You went scuba level. I can still breathe. All right, let's go submarine.
So if we're going submarine level, if we're going scuba level, I'm going to say last year, I kind of called my shot on Christopher Herndon. He was a guy all pre-draft process I was hyping up. And let's be honest, I mean, he had a really good productive year for the Jets that he was fantasy viable this year. I would say for me, this year's Christopher Herndon for me in many ways, athletically, upside, you know, developmental side, I'm going to say it's Alzay Mack, who's at number 10 for me in my overall tight end rankings. That's a guy who I think is probably going to go round 4 or round 5, similar to where Herndon went, who I think can make a name for himself this year in a pass-catching way and get on the field and make an impact for whatever team ends up drafting him.
So I'm going to follow that up. If I'm going to talk about, you know, fantasy football, and we're going to talk about players that are going to make us a splash both for your fantasy teams but also in the NFL, my scuba level player, I'd be remiss if I didn't say my scuba level player was Isaac Nauta. I think he's universally underrated. I think that on our podcast, we're probably some of the highest people on him. And I think there's good reason for that, as we talked about. If I'm going to go scuba level, if I'm going to go to the point where, you know, I'm barely breathing, gasping for air, and how is it possible that this player can do it? You know, what's really disgusting is I was going to say Alizay Mack. So you're forcing my hand to go somewhere else. You know where I'm going to go, to be very honest with you? I wouldn't be shocked. I like Dax Raymond too. I'm going to go scuba. I'm going to go total submarine, barely gasping for air, Dax Raymond. I like Caleb Wilson. I like what he was going to be my next pick, but I think Dax Raymond, because of what he can do a little bit as a blocker, what he could bring both in size and athleticism as a receiver, there's room for me to be happy about that. I would have said Joshua Oliver as well in this discussion, but that's too shallow. We were talking the murky depths of the submarine level. So the submarine level, I would go Dax Raymond. That's who I'm going to kind of live with.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think they're all good calls. If I didn't say Sternberger, I was going to say Isaac Nauta, because I know I mentioned before that I think Hockenson and Irv Smith will play the most in terms of snap counts, and I know that doesn't mean much in terms of statistics, but it does mean a lot in what the NFL team thinks of them and values in them, because that means they're on the field the most. If I was going to say right now, third tight end who I think is going to play the most snaps this year, I'm going to say it's Isaac Nauta.
Hands down.
More snaps than Noah Fant. Yep. More snaps than Jay Sternberger. More snaps than Dawson Knox.
Yep.
So, you know, the only other guy who I think could be in consideration is Caden Smith, who I think is a functional blocker. But I'm going to say, if I was going to go out on a limb a little bit, I'm going to say that I think there's a strong likelihood Isaac Nauta plays more snaps than any other tight end not named TJ Hockenson or Irv Smith in his rookie year. Now, obviously, landing spot can dramatically alter this. So we're basically saying, you know, in a situation that's pretty neutral for all these guys, you know, if they ended up in things, you know, obviously injuries and a lot of factors play into total snap counts. But, so, you know, in terms of because his blocking capabilities and his pass catching capabilities, I think you could see him play a lot of snaps early in the year. I do think he's going to sneak into the top 100 picks. So I do think he will have some draft capital associated with him as probably a late third round pick, or if he makes it out of the top 100, early fourth round pick. So I think he's going to play a lot of snaps potentially this year. And if he goes in the day three, I mean, if he goes in day two, I think he's got a capability of even playing more than Noah Fant.
So I mean, you heard it right there. I converted Paul. So Paul's officially converted. It took 2 years, but we got him up there. He's ready to go now. And everybody's getting hip on Isaac Nauta. Just everybody's getting hip on him. They're like, oh, wow, where'd he come from? Never saw him.
Yeah, because you know why though? Because he only caught 8 catches last year. Everybody wanted to bury him, and you know, we live in the world.
He
was buried, and we live in the world of analytics and market share and stuff like that. And you know, listen, we know that me and you are more film guys, and you know, we respect statistics and analytics. We are math teachers. We respect analytics, we respect statistics, we think they have a place, but we don't look at them as a be end end all. We don't raise somebody up who has elite production, aka Caleb Wilson, has really, really good statistical production.
Excellent.
When he's played. And we don't rise up him because of that production. And on the flip side, we don't bury somebody for lack of production because of opportunity, you know, and maybe depth chart and stuff like that, if we see talent on a player. And Isaac Nauta and Caleb Wilson are perfect examples of that.
And you know what? To just close this out, at least for my final point, I'll leave everybody with this. We talk about on our show, you know, our player problem solving paradigm. We talk about that as the spirit which drives our evaluations and how it's really beginning to shape our look at the game. And it really doesn't matter. The reason why production is not something that we focus on is because you can have massive amounts of production in problems that don't even look, sound, or smell like NFL behaving problems. And for that reason, it means that the production lacks transferability. We can look at them as filters, as ways of trying to delineate which guys are standing out amongst their peers in the collegiate level. But the fact remains is that the information on the field is helping shape and affect the way in which these players perform. Unless you can evaluate them in problems that sound and feel like NFL problems, well, then you're not really seeing everything that they can or they're capable of doing. So production to me, it is what it is. It's production. Now, you tell me the production happened at an NFL level, then that's a different story. You tell me the production happened at a level where all problems were similarly behaving to that of the NFL, that's a different story. So that's why I think production is always under scrutiny, but I think it provides a tremendous and invaluable filter that we all should take advantage of it. So I'm right there with you, Paul.
Yeah, and listen, when we transition next week to the running backs and wide receivers, and we'll probably be bringing you guys two Tier Buster podcasts next week to kind of round out the series before we turn our attention to a combine preview. You know, one of the top running backs in the country and one of the top wide receivers in the country. It's going to be a lot of production versus film. You know, where do we stand on a couple of the top prospects at that position, you know, who don't have great production, but have the tools and traits and movement skills and stuff that really make them intriguing. And I'll be interested to see kind of where we put them in our, you know, in our pecking order, in our rankings, in our tiers.
That's why it's problem versus production. Forget film versus production. I'm challenging everybody to put problem versus production. Were the problems like NFL problems and they got the production? I'm intrigued. If it's not that, then it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, guys, hopefully you enjoyed this Tier Buster tight end show. Like, I mean, if you knew nothing about the tight end class, I think you could hopefully have listened to this show and feel like you just got a crash course in the 2019 tight ends and you're ready to go and knowing about these guys, watching them at the combine, you know, potentially feeling like you have a good grasp on who they are, what type of player they are, what type of role they maybe could have at the next level, you know, and feel good about knowing who is and making up this tight end class. That's the goal of these shows, as we bring them to you, to discuss the class by position, to kind of let you know our thoughts and our rankings, but also just to kind of paint you guys a picture on who these guys are. So if you're someone who really starts to turn your attention to the draft class now following the NFL season, you kind of get that crash course you need here in one-stop shop for you here at Saturday to Sunday. If you're interested in this stuff, please get over to the Saturday to Sunday football website, click on the premium content tab, purchase the premium notebooks. You get the 2019 scouting notebooks. It now has about 100 player profiles of this year's draft class. It has all our notes on guys draft eligible who didn't even declare, like the Bryan Edwards of the world, you know, and the Brian Lewerkes and guys like that as well. You get the rankings notebook, which has our draft eligible rankings. Matt's are now up there. Mine are up there. You get the tiers by me, by Matt. You get our Devy rankings. I've updated my Dynasty rookie rankings from last year, so all of last year's rookie class going into their, you know, their first off season, where I would value those guys. And then you'll also get our Dynasty rookie rankings as well right after the draft as well. You also get the freshman notebook, which will come out sometime probably in late March or early April, which has player profiles on many of the top incoming freshmen in the college football. And then you get the draft projections notebook in April, which is a detailed outline of every single player in the NFL draft, tabs for every single position, a projected big board for the first round, top 100 in every pick in the draft, notes, metrics on every single player that I think could potentially be taken in the NFL draft. You get all of it for $9.99. It is the best way to support the show and help us grow, help us continue to do what we're doing. On some housekeeping ends, the RSS feed has been updated across all major platforms, so we believe that it should be no issues moving forward in terms of you getting the podcast in your podcast feed as you normally would. If you have any issues and it's not updating, please reach out to Matt or I or the Saturday Sunday Twitter handle and let us know. So on behalf of Matt, on behalf of our sound and tech engineer, David Nakano, and myself, thank you for joining us. And we look forward next time taking you from Saturday to Sunday.